Good afternoon, Bay Area. Welcome to the Sights and Sounds Show with Janae Darden, where every week we tap into the Bay Area art scene and bring you rich conversations with artists. On today's show, a play about William Shakespeare's friends, then a new talk show about the LGBTQ plus community and issues they face, and that's happening at the San Francisco Public Library. And there's a new executive director and new vibe at this year's Bay Area Book Festival. This episode today is all about the books, baby. That's all coming up. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. You know, a good friend may pick you up when you get a flat tire or bring you some soup when you're sick. And in the case of William Shakespeare, his friends made sure his work was organized and preserved after his death in 1616. This is what the play The Book of Will is about. Fred Pitts portrays one of Shakespeare's friends, and you've probably heard Fred on KLW State of the Bay covering arts and as a fill-in host. So the Ross Valley Players produced The Book of Will, and you can see it now until June 8th at the Barn Theater in Marin. And here with me to chat about Shakespeare, friendship, and things is Fred Pitts. We've been cracking up before the show started.
It's so funny being on this side of the desk.
That's right, because you're used to, I know. Yeah. We talked about, you know, my issues with being interviewed, but I don't have to deal with that today because I'm interviewing you. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me in. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So I'm just thinking, like, what his friends did was incredible.
Right.
This is why we know who Shakespeare is.
This is exactly right.
Can you imagine a world, the theater world and literature without Shakespeare?
I cannot. It was a different world back then because the backstory is when playwrights would write things, especially Shakespeare, he would write, of course, just with his hand, and then he would write different lines or sides for each character. And there weren't really plays written as we know them now.
Right.
So there were publishers who basically just took the rights to the plays, and whoever printed it first was the one who got the rights. So there were Shakespeare plays that had been printed in these things called quartos, which are kind of like little pamphlets. Mm-hmm. But it was basically they would hire people to go watch the shows, copy down what the actors would say, and then that was the script. So there were different varieties of, say, Hamlet that had been printed by different people. So one version of Hamlet may be a little bit different.
Okay.
And that was the challenge. You know, these were kind of not authentically vetted versions of Shakespeare's plays.
Mm-hmm.
So once Shakespeare died in 1616, his friends, Henry Condell and John Hemmings, who were actually part of the same theater troupe with Shakespeare, they were called the Lord Chamberlain's Men, then the King's Men,
okay,
said, we got to make sure we get these things printed for posterity. So they cobbled together the sides they had, copies of the scripts that they had in their own theater house, some of the other published plays, which were close to what was actually produced,
mm-hmm,
and had them printed in this big folio book, which was at the time expensive. Usually only Bibles were printed that way.
Wow.
Yeah.
I heard they're going for I think I read it was an auction for $10 million almost.
That's probably true. That's probably true.
Recent times.
Yeah.
Okay. And so you play one of his friends, Henry Condell. So let me backtrack. So in the Book of Will, mm-hmm, is it fiction? Is it fact? Is it a little bit of both?
Most plays written are, we'll call them fictionalized versions of what happened.
Yeah.
This is a story of what might have happened with the two friends trying to produce a play. And it's a great story of friendship, of love, of Shakespeare. What I really like about this play, and Lauren Gunderson, who's the playwright, there are incredibly strong women in this show.
Mm.
Because it's not just about these two guys. It's about Rebecca Hemmings, John's wife, or Elizabeth Condell, Henry's wife, John's daughter, Alice. You know, these are women who were the backbone of their lives and were very influential in trying to get these books produced. And there's even a mention of a character named Amelia Lanier, or Amelia Bassano was her name,
mm-hmm,
and she is known as the first English woman to have a book published of poetry.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it's supposed that she was an inspiration or a muse to Shakespeare, and that she actually did help financially back the production or the printing of the book.
Interesting.
So it's a great story.
So there's so much history. That's the kind of show that it make me like after I'm writing notes and then I want to go look up people afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
So tell us about you play Henry Condell.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about him. This character, this guy. He was an actor.
He was a member of the Lord Chamberlain's group or the King's Men, mm-hmm. The theater troupe with John Hemmings and Shakespeare and Richard Burbage, who was the most well-known English actor of the time. In fact, when he died, his funeral was, I guess, more well attended than the Queen of England at the time,
oh
is what
my
they
goodness.
Say. Yeah.
Talk about celebrity.
Exactly.
Celebrity culture back there. Right?
And in this story, you know, it begins with the three of them, Burbage and John and Henry, having witnessed one of those unsanctioned versions of Hamlet and how awful it was.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happens that motivates John and Henry to say, oh my gosh, what happens now? If something happens and we don't have these plays, we have to have them published.
Right.
And Henry is, in many ways, the driving force because he's kind of energetic and excitable, and I won't use the word neurotic, but
okay.
He really is pushing for everybody to publish this book. He's the kind of guy who has the ideas but doesn't think about the logistics, and John is the friend who is the logistics man.
Okay.
So between the two of them, you know, they push and push and push and get this thing done.
That's a good balance because you have somebody, that's like real logical, and someone who's the dreamer, mm-hmm. and is like really energized.
Yeah.
And so you need that.
And the characters, you can tell how strong their friendship is because they can talk, they can banter, they can argue, but in the end, the love is there. The friendship is there.
Oh.
The desire is there. And that's what I love about the script.
Do you share any characteristics with Henry?
It's probably a question you should ask other people. But ask my wife that question. She's actually in the show with me.
Cool.
I think I'm a cross between both of them.
Okay.
I can be hyper and manic and have the... Actually, that's not true. I am Henry.
Okay.
If you ask my wife, I'm
it's
Henry.
It's funny, when I read the description...
I'm the one who's got... Here's my idea. Let's just do this. And then my wife will say... How are we going to make this work? We'll figure it out.
I got that vibe from you, Fred.
Yeah,
I got that vibe from you when I met
fine.
You.
It's me.
You know, when I read the premise of the story, I thought about the importance of friendships, you know, mm-hmm. to artists.
Mm-hmm.
We wouldn't even know Shakespeare if it weren't for his friends. I mean, that was what they did was really, really huge.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, just for me, I mean, I'm a poet, I'm a writer, I work in radio, and just how important friends are to me as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that too, because that's what really struck me about when I read what this play was about. I was just thinking about how important friendships are for artists, especially like just trying to get your work out there, people to keep you lifted, motivated,
mm-hmm.
struggling artists.
Mm-hmm.
I know there's been times where I was, you know, struggling and friends helped me out. I mean, so yeah, the importance of friendship.
It's funny when you do shows, at least my experience is when I do shows, I love working with the actors and the directors and everybody else involved with it because you are a unit.
Mm-hmm.
You learn about your fellow actors' personalities, their quirks, whatever, but you learn how to work with each other. You learn how to support each other, and it really is an incredibly supportive environment, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, you got a show like this with 13 people. You know, my wife and I always comment the fact that we've got 13 really nice, wonderful individuals to play with every night. And that's what makes theater a joy, when mm-hmm. you can think of it as play and tell a story and affect people that you're working with.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what makes it fun.
So your wife's in the play. Who does she play?
She plays my wife. She plays Elizabeth Condell, Henry's wife, and she also plays Amelia Lanier,
the poet.
Poet, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
How is that? Your wife plays your wife?
Yep.
Was that a stretch?
Not really. Well, here's the secret. This is our 16th show together.
Oh, wow.
16,
okay.
Which is unheard of.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm thinking like Ruby Dee and Ozzie Davis.
Kind of.
Like,
kind
yeah.
of, yeah. But 16 shows, yeah.
That's a lot. Because I was looking at your list of the shows you've been in. You've been in about almost 40 shows. So that's almost close to half the shows you've been
in. I lost count.
That's like she's been in with you.
Yeah,
so.
It, I don't know how that works out. It's luck of the draw, I guess, because you audition for a show and I'm not in the minds of a director who casts, but it all worked out.
Is there, looking back on your career, is there a friend who you feel has been like played a pivotal role in you as an artist? You know,
as an actor, well,
as an actor,
I can say it's my wife because that's the obvious answer. There's Sean J. West is a really good friend of mine who I talked about in, he's got a podcast called Creatively Shaded.
Yes.
And he's an actor, he's a director, smart man. He's a really good sounding board. And we're both actors of color.
Mm-hmm.
And so when there are issues that come up with being actors of color in the theatrical world, I can usually bounce an issue off of him,
yeah,
or he can bounce one off of me. So
yeah,
that makes life easier.
Yeah, it's good too, to have artists, friends to vent to. Yeah.
I have a few, which is really nice.
Yeah. If you're just joining us, I am speaking with KLW's Fred Pitts. He's currently performing in the Ross Valley Players production of The Book of Will, and you can see it now until June 8th at the Barn Theater in Marin. Fred, you have you perform, you tell stories, and you have an interesting personal story. Because when you're not on stage,
go ahead and say it.
You're a doctor.
Yeah, yeah.
Fred's a doctor. you were an ER doctor for 20 years.
More than that, yeah.
And, wow.
Which was crazy because I would do ER shifts sometimes and I'd go to work. Or I'd have a show in the evening and go to work and do a night shift.
Oh, my goodness.
That was when I was young and crazy.
ER is like... That is intense.
ER is an adventure, yeah.
Yeah.
And I loved it. But I think that the theater was a great balance because theater was my release.
Mm.
When you're working in the ER or any kind of medical world, you have to maintain a certain level of emotional stability.
Yeah.
Because there's chaos all around you. You've got to be the rock in the middle. And so being in theater allowed me to let all the emotions go.
I wanted to know that. I'm thinking too, like, especially in the ER, mm-hmm, just because I know people that have worked in the ER.
Oh, yeah.
And there are characters in the ER. does that inspire you too as well? Like when you're acting, because I know in the ER it's all kind. You could do a whole play on.
Well, people have been asking me to do a solo show about my life in the emergency department. It's in the back of my mind, but I'm not there yet.
Okay.
But yeah, I've had a few characters in the ER be the inspiration for some characters I've done on stage, just the mindset and the attitude, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worked out. I don't do that anymore. I now work in a nice desk job.
Okay.
Working in pharmacovigilance, drug safety. But working in the ER was crazy. Loved it, but I'm done.
Yeah. Okay, well, the good thing is if you have fresh shows and you pass out.
That is a jinx. Well, there used to be the running joke used to be that whenever I would do a show, somebody would always get hurt during the show, and that was true. There was a streak of like 9 shows where something would happen, and I'd have to take care of them. True story, I cut my finger before a performance one night, and I had to go to the ER to get stitches, and called the stage manager, said, "I'm in the ER, but I'll be there." I got to the theater half an hour later, half hour late. I performed the show with my thumb wrapped in a bandage.
Oh my goodness!
But I did it.
Oh my! I hope this when the play took place, there were bandages that you could.
It worked.
It worked. Okay.
It worked. People asked, but it worked.
Man, yeah. Wow! So you're still working in medicine, but you're not practicing as a doctor.
Correct. Yes.
Interesting. So again, you've been in nearly 40 plays. And counting. You've been doing this for a long time, which is good.
I have.
And you've been in so many, part of so many productions.
I've been doing this since I was 5.
Wow.
Yeah.
That 5. Must feel good to say.
Well, it does and it does. Because like you say you've been doing this since you're 5 and you think, man, how old am I? But that's okay.
That's okay.
It is who I am.
Yeah.
Somebody once asked me when I was working in the ER, why do you do theater? And my answer was, I have no choice.
Mm.
It is who I am.
Yeah.
It is. I love telling stories. I love performing for people. I love interacting with other people telling stories.
Yeah.
That's why I love the show I'm in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I want to ask you, too, because you've done so many plays, is there anything that stands out to you about this production, The Book of Will?
Separate than the other ones, I love the fact that, before COVID, people would do, large-scale shows,
mm-hmm,
because we had a lot of people on stage. And then after COVID, theater shrank.
Right.
One person shows, 2-person shows, small cast shows. I love being in a large cast show.
Mm.
I haven't been in one for a long time.
Okay.
And just watching all these artists perform at the highest level and tell the story, interact, create a character, play on stage, have conversations backstage. I mean, I think that's what I like about the script is that every character is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Every character is smart. And the actors involved in this production have taken great pains to create characters that are fascinating to watch.
Yeah.
And I'm, you know, the way the script is put together, I'm on stage all the time, except for one stage, one show, or one scene. So I get to watch and interact with people, and I love watching everybody perform.
That's, oh man, that's great.
Yeah.
That sounds like so much fun.
Yeah, it makes it real.
I was saying, it's nothing like doing what you love.
Yeah.
Which brings me to my final question. What do you love most about what you do?
Probably having people react however they react to a story.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a story of, you know, two friends putting Shakespeare's book together, or whether it's a show about like Sweat, or, you know, people who have gone through factory closures, or telling a story as Martin Luther King and watching people react who may have been alive during that time.
Yeah.
I think the joy of theater is the prospect of affecting at least one person when you're doing the show, whether they like it or not. You want some kind of reaction. And I think that's what I love, is telling a story, being honest about telling the story, and having people be affected by the story.
Yeah.
That's why you do theater. At least that's why I do theater.
And good theater sticks with you.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. And I've been very blessed with the stuff I've done in my life. I really have been.
Well, Fred, I am so happy I got to chat with you.
It's been a pleasure.
And meet you. We have been having so much fun today. And congratulations on this role and just teaching us more about Shakespeare and that history, you know?
Come see the show, folks. It's a great production.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. I've been chatting with actor Fred Pitts. The Ross Valley Players production of The Book of Will is running now until June 8th at the Barn Theater in Marin. And coming up, don't turn that dial, don't click away. I chat with the host of a new talk show-ish program at the San Francisco Main Library. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Sights and Sounds Show with me, Janae Darden. So some of the reasons why I love libraries are because they're places where you can expand your view of the world and be with community. And you can find these elements with Booked and Beautiful. It's a new talk show at the San Francisco Public Library, their main branch. Booked and Beautiful features onstage conversations with influencers within the local LGBTQ plus community. And there are live performances and audience participation too. Artist Sanjeev is the host, and Sanjeev is known for combining dance, drag, culture, and drama to his performances. He's also the co-founder of Parivar. I hope I pronounced that right. Okay, he said I did. He gave it a thumbs up, which is a collective that celebrates queer and trans South Asian identities. And the next Booked and Beautiful event is on May 27th. And here joining me is the first talk show host I think I've interviewed. Hey, Sanjeev.
Janae, I'm your first talk show host.
I think so. I think you are.
The invitation is open for you to join me at the library at some point in the future for more Booked and Beautiful.
You know, I love books. I love beautiful, you know, and I love the LGBTQ plus community.
We are.
And I love to talk.
Okay, well, then my people will contact your people, and we will have a fabulous time at the Corrett Auditorium at the San Francisco Main Library.
Yes, so that's all just a whole big combination. Before we even get into this Booked and Beautiful, which, by the way, when I heard the title, I said, well, I didn't come up with that. Not that I'm hating, maybe a little bit, not really, but I watched some videos of you performing, and I just really loved the energy that you bring on stage as a performer, as a dancer. Tell us, what got you into dance and performance?
Oh my goodness. I feel like, you know, Fred really was just a perfect person to set the tone here in this conversation.
Yeah.
I started very young. I never took classes. I didn't sort of learn how to dance. It was something that was in my body and it expressed itself very naturally. My parents are lovely, amazing, just beautiful human beings that allowed me to flow with whatever rhythm came my way and encouraged and empowered and affirmed. And that has led to a lifelong journey through the path of artistry and expression that continues to evolve, continues to keep me connected to myself, most importantly, so that way I can pour out into the community.
And I was watching something where you said you learned how to walk was you were trying to walk to the stereo.
Yeah, I would hold the table, hold the couch, make my way to the stereo. And this was like late 80s. And we had those stereo towers were like all the rage. And we still
Yes.
have our dusty one there. But I'd open the door, somehow figure out the buttons and blast it and just learn the rhythm. And my parents are always the first two on the dance floor at any party. And so just seeing and feeling and experiencing that has just led me to move. And I don't consider myself a technically trained dancer or anything like that, and I respect that path so much. But I think people would be surprised to see how long it takes me to pick up choreography. But once I get it, I get it, and I'm gonna slay it on that stage.
No, and you do, and it's like you do slay it, and the energy that you bring, you know. That's why I was watching one of your routines, and you were doing really slow movements, and then like the music just really kicked into high gear, and you just went with it. Now, what is the name of that music that you dance to?
Yeah, there's so many names to it. The
Okay.
foundation of my music really is something that I build myself. So often people don't know this about me, but I do design all of my own soundscapes that I perform
Oh,
to.
okay.
So I like to take Bollywood music, Bhangra music from Northern India, American pop culture, and just music that resonates not only with my own cultural experience, but also things that are satisfying to the senses. And I try to tell a story. So for me, it's about weaving the story together. And sometimes that's across different languages and different mediums. I will record my own vocals sometimes. I'm not a singer, let me just state for the record on
Okay.
the air, but I can figure out how to interpolate sounds with my own voice and different sounds. I'll grab audio of trees rustling and birds chirping and really layer that into it. So I don't really know what genre to call it. I just call it a moment of sort of a dream soundscape, I guess.
So you're doing like audio engineering and you're doing choreography and costuming too and
All of it. I mean, and so gratefully, it's really those parts of the process. We focus on the creation, what is at the end product of it. But for me, the creating is the really fun part of things. It's the luxurious part where I'm able to connect with something deeper, something more, I don't even know the words for it, something in the ether. There's something
Yeah.
divine about that process because I see it as a process of making love with all the tools and messages and stories that come my way. And from that moment of passion and process of passion, comes this performance that is exciting and my present, my gift to those that are observing, even if it's just myself in a mirror.
And you've evolved as an artist. And I watched an interview where you said you did drag to please others and you weren't being yourself. And I found that interesting because so many drag artists I've interviewed felt that, or have told me that they felt that they found authenticity of themselves in drag. And then I saw the opposite, or I heard the opposite from you. So talk about what you meant by that as far as not feeling like your true self doing drag.
I think the larger context of that statement is really looking at the concept and definition of drag. Often, drag is defined in popular culture as a character or caricature or a gender performance, which are all absolutely valid. However, for me to embody a drag, for me, it recognizes that all of us, at the core of who we are a simple spark of light. We are a soul, energy, vibe in a body. And all of that is drag. Everything throughout the day, we're doing drag in different components and different ways we're expressing ourselves. We often also can refer to this as code switching. When we look at different cultural communities and the impacts of code switching, we have to change our drag up sometimes to be deemed more safe, to be deemed more acceptable or assimilate in certain situations. So that's the drag I'm referring to that didn't make me feel authentic. When I started to lean more into the core of my being, what are my values? What is driving me? What's the thing that unites us all? And for me, the understanding is that all of us have a breath. That's it. We're equal at that level. And if we can all connect to that and connect to the breath that is animating our body, we can then recognize we have power over the drag that we exude. Because if we're going to do it with intention and care. So now, when I call myself a drag artist or I embody a drag artistry, I like to say that me as a drag artist is the purest form of myself.
Okay.
While I might be embodying and adorning myself with artifice, there's an intention behind that. I certainly love to play characters. I've grown up in theater. I love that. I love playing caricatures or just really leaning into some of the more pop culture style of drag. But the essence of what I do every single day on stage, on film, wherever it is, it's the purest form of myself with just a little bit more glitz and glam.
I about to say, because I seen with those gold, you had some really pretty gold garments on in one of the videos I watched you in. So yeah, so for people listening, his appearance as far as on stage, now what you think of as traditional drag, what may come to mind. But the things that you wear are beautiful and the makeup's gorgeous. And I'm jealous of Sanjeev too. Not only does he have a good title for his talk show, but he has some really pretty eyes and he knows how to accentuate them.
They're my mom's eyes.
They were her
gift to me among many things that she gave me. And, you know, funny enough, the wonderful outfits that I wear are often my mom and my sister's like outfits. They're Indian clothes or their saris or their jewelry. And I love adorning myself in that because as a little kid, sort of coveted that, you know, didn't understand what was happening within me, but I understood that I just connected to being a soul and the labels of gender or anything like that just did never fit well for me or never felt made me feel whole. And to be able to honor that inner child's maybe moment of confusion or anything and adorn myself with the same saris and fabric and jewelry that I saw my mom wearing or my sister's wearing is such a beautiful moment of peace. And I often hear from folks, you know, when they find that out, they say, thank you, because I dreamed I could wear a sari and I never got a chance to. And so many people can't. And I recognize that. I want to name that while I've had those privileges to be affirmed in my identities and to be loved and cared for, that that's not everybody's story.
Yeah.
And I also believe that we must celebrate the moments where things are going well so we can shine a light where it's not going well and provide the support and care and community that's needed there. So I do that through fashion. You know, I do love a sequin. I do love a sparkly moment. I always say as a drag performer, I have to bring my own production with me. So sequins are not only fun to wear, but they're their production. It's free lighting.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm gonna be a little bit more illuminated because if I'm in a dark bar, which I often am performing, I got to bring my own lights with me.
So and so all of the, you know, I see how you're so focused on everything, you know, when you're producing, you're just so focused on the details. So let's talk about how this all ties into Booked and Beautiful, this show. And that I know, too, you focus on the details with producing. Where did that idea come from to do a talk show-ish at, you know, the public library?
You know, the iconic San Francisco Public Library and all of their branches, we've had a wonderful relationship over the years where I've gone to like perform, present, have done a couple of events there. And it was just a very organic conversation. Now, I am a child of the 90s and of talk shows in the 90s. Y'all, I know they're problematic. Okay, don't cancel me. It was just the time and place. Okay?
They were good, too.
They were juicy. And listen, I live for them, okay?
Right.
So I'd always had this little thing in my mood board, my spirit, that I was like, when I get the opportunity, maybe it's going to be my time to be a talk show host. And as I have continued to work and meet so many incredible artists, change makers, culture carriers, lights in our community, I just wanted to talk to them. Backstage is so much fun for me at shows because I'm talking to people, I'm hanging out, I'm getting to learn stories. So I wanted to really formalize that. And the partnership with San Francisco Public Library was beautiful, especially through the Hormel LGBTQIA Center in the library, known as the queerest library in the world. This partnership was natural and it evolved from like, hey, could we do an event to let's do a series, let's do a talk show, let's bring in voices and artists and wonderful people, and let's talk about their creative process. Let's talk about the intention behind what they do and how they continue to share light in our communities, especially when we need it so, so deeply.
If you're just tuning in, I'm chatting with performing artist Sanjeev, and he is the host of Booked and Beautiful, which is a talk show that you can catch on May 27th at the San Francisco Main Public Library. So you can sit in the audience and and take it all in. So, wow, that's really, really incredible, especially, too, like you said, you have this show, you know, during this really politically tense time. Mm-hmm. How, you know, and we talked earlier about as far as you, you know, preparing for when you're dancing. How do you approach preparing for a talk show compared to when you're dancing? You know, because this is, it's, you're still on stage, right? You're still being the artist that you are, but I know it's a different type of energy.
Yeah. You know, when I prepare for performances, whether again on stage or on camera, I prepare like an athlete. I am an athlete, so I want to name that, is that I use my body to tell a story, to accomplish a goal or a task, and that's to provide a performance or provide a scene or whatever this might be. So I do train pretty heavily, you know, cardio, weights, just also being, making sure I'm recovering and resting the body. That's something that I'm learning as I evolve. You can't always be going 10 miles per minute, working every single job in one day. And so I really started to have more grace with myself. Performing, presenting at a talk show and just being at a talk show, I kind of love this process because it just allows me to be a nerd. I love reading. I love just researching. So much of my performances have all of these little details that I've curated or these Easter eggs that I put in that I don't believe anybody would ever know, but it's sort of like how, you know, Shakespeare would write in the footnotes, like little notes that people wouldn't really get. But when you look at the anthology of the work, you say, oh, there was intention behind that eyeshadow color. There was intention with how that was draped because it references this certain thing. So with Booked and Beautiful, I get to sit in the world of an artist and consume everything that they're doing. So for, you know, my next guest, I am on their Instagram. I'm looking at all the videos. Finding anything I can online, chatting with them lightly, and then just immersing myself, embodying what they embody, really trying to put all of that in my spirit. So that way, when we do have that conversation on stage, it just flows naturally. And so, yeah, my nerd identity activates very clearly in this preparation process. And I love it. It's so nice. And I also get to rest my body a little bit.
Yeah. So, so you get to rest your body. You get to talk. You get to, and then too, like, again, sometimes your guests perform on stage too as well. So who, do you know who your next guest is going to be?
Our next guest is going to be the fabulous, amazing, incredible, wonderful Tai Pei, who is an incredible drag artist and a wonderful presence on the internet. Tai Pei Drag Queen on Instagram shares an incredible presence that showcases education, empowerment, and entertainment, that tells the history of fashion, of styling, of drag, of pop culture moments in these creative videos, always serves an amazing look. The artistry, the technical artistry, the spiritual artistry that this incredible human being embodies and exudes is just absolutely out of this world. And I've been a fan of Tai Pei for a long time. We used to perform in the same circuit together many, many years ago, well before COVID. We're going to stop the dating there.
Okay.
And I'm so excited to see them evolve into this new place of presence and influence. And so to have them on the stage with me, seeing them after so many years in person, I'm going to have to maintain myself because I'm such a fangirl, but I got a job to do. We have to have an interview and make sure our audience is getting to learn more about Tai Pei.
So, okay. So I'm sure it's going to be a really good conversation since you already have a connection. Sanjeev, thank you so much for telling us about Booked and Beautiful. I will definitely stop by one of these days, and good luck with everything.
Janae, you're such a doll. I appreciate you. Thank you for all the light you shine on the community. I cannot wait to hang out and have you as a guest on Booked and Beautiful at the library.
We got a lot to talk about. Yes. But until then, Sanjeev is the host of Booked and Beautiful, and their next event is on Tuesday, May 27th at the San Francisco Main Public Library. We'll have all that information on KLW Sights and Sounds page. If you can't make it, but try and make it, be there in person, but you can also go back and look at past episodes of his show on the library YouTube channel. And next up is one of my favorite times of the year, the Bay Area Book Festival. Yay! We'll hear about what to expect. We'll be right back. Listening to the Sights and Sounds show with Janae Darden. There's an annual event coming up that I can't miss. And if you're a book nerd like me, you know what I'm talking about and you understand how I'm feeling. the Bay Area Book Festival is back this year. And yes, I will be wearing my socks with bookshelves on them because I'm a nerd. Enjoy a weekend of readings, writing, prose, author talks, and sunshine in downtown Berkeley on Saturday, May 31st and Sunday, June 1st. And there's a new executive director leading the festival, J.K. Fowler. J.K. is a former publisher of Oakland's Nomadic Press. We spoke about the importance of the book festival during the current political climate and using books to create a brighter future. J.K. Fowler, it's so good to see you. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Janae. It's great to be here.
Wow, you are the executive director of the Bay Area Book Festival. I'm really excited for you. You were my former publisher of Nomadic Press, so I'm grateful to you always because you were the first person to publish me, to publish my book. So what made you want to be ED of the Bay Area Book Festival? That's a big job, JK.
It is a big job. Yeah, it came on September of last year. And I think what interested me is that, we're at a time when we need to be having really important, complicated, nuanced conversations across a number of topics, right? We're a nation that's divided more than ever. And I think that, festivals, in particular book festivals, offer a wonderful platform where we can invite in a lot of those conversations, and the vehicle for those conversations are books. And as you know, I love books, and I was able to step in its 11th year. So there's 10 years of foundation that have been laid. And so it was really nice to step into a wonderful team, a history and a foundation of this particular festival in downtown Berkeley. And there was also a lot of openness to exploring new directions for the festival. And we'll get into that, I'm sure, in a little bit.
Yes, definitely. So this year's theme is changing the narrative. Tell us, what does that mean?
The offering here is an invitation to challenge long-held beliefs, to platform voices that are maybe less heard than others. And it's an invitation to interrogate narratives across the board. And so I think a lot of the programming that we see on our stages this year are invitations into those types of conversations that are going to challenge those long-held beliefs or give us the tools that we need to kind of move forward in ways that are healthier to ourselves and our communities. So talking about mutual aid, talking about communities of care, talking about tools that we can use as we organize on the local, state, and national level to support whatever semblance of democracy remains. These are all really important conversations, and all are geared towards that energy of shifting narratives.
You know, we're talking about questioning the future of democracy. And I'm just thinking about, you're stepping into this role at a time where there's a lot of book bans. Earlier this month, the president fired the Librarian of Congress, Carla Hayden. She was the first woman and first African-American to hold that position. And then I'm also thinking about an issue that gravely concerns me too as well, which is literacy. Mm-hmm. The National Literacy Institute reports that 54% of American adults fall below a sixth grade reading level. Mm-hmm. And California has one of the lowest adult literacy rates in the country. EdSource reports 3 out of 10 Californians struggle with basic reading. How does this festival play a part, maybe in even just, and I don't know if there's something you've thought about or something you may be thinking about for the future, but just trying to even and deal with literacy because people aren't reading.
Mm-hmm. I think where I'll start is, our Family Day programming, which is happening at the Berkeley Central Library all day on May 31st. We partnered with the Social Justice Children's Book Fair on the programming throughout that day. And so basically from 10:30 in the morning until 5 o'clock at night, we are featuring independent illustrators, authors that are sharing books and stories from those books that are the types of stories and books that are being banned by the current administration. Getting back to this narrative piece, narratives inform the ways in which we understand ourselves and our own story. It also informs the ways in which we view our relationship to others and the relationship to an imagined collective, right? And so I think the reason that art, and in particular literature in this moment, is being targeted is the same reason it's always been targeted, when it comes to autocrats taking power and kind of authoritarian energy really centers around the destruction of culture and narrative, replacing it with a more streamlined narrative that is in support of the authoritarian regime. And so I think that's what we're seeing. And in our small way, we're hoping to continue to support those narratives that challenge that authoritarian viewpoint. And for all of their talk about love of free speech, you know, we're seeing the limitations of that free speech in really clear ways, right? So it's, they're not actually free speech proponents. They're actually trying to tamp down free speech in so many ways. So our festival is an invitation to truly celebrate free speech, truly celebrate narratives that complicate the viewpoints and the talking points of the authoritarian regime, and, you know, have a lot of fun while we're doing it, right? This is serious work, but it's also fun work.
And kind of to piggyback off of what you're saying, I'm thinking about studies that show that reading fiction creates empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really think it matters how we encounter alternative narratives, whether it's in an oral tradition where we're sitting on our stoops and we're sharing stories with each other, whether it's in a book, whether it's on the radio, whether it's, you know, ebook, it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that we start to interface, we continue to interface with narratives that differ from our own. I think that can happen across genres, poetry, nonfiction, fiction, sci-fi, you know, especially the spec fic stuff that is being, you know, is really hot right now. Mm-hmm. Folks are really hungry for alternative narratives and alternative worlds. And so I think in so many ways, we're collectively future casting beyond this world that has so many horrific complications right now.
Which is why I was happy to see your Chicano horror panel. And I don't consume a lot of horror, but I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah. Whatever your interests are, I think we've got you covered this year. Festivals are beautiful because it is this conglomeration of a bunch of different viewpoints and voices and people all coming together for this very short duration of time, sharing space, getting to know one another. You know, I've referred to it as, I'm hoping to engender a sort of family reunion feel for the festival. I know family reunions are not always the most positive experiences for some folks. So I'll broaden that to say maybe a chosen family reunion or community reunion, whatever the terminology. The underlying energy there is that I want folks to be able to come together on an annual basis to share stories with each other, hear about things that are working, talk about the things that have not worked in organizing and sharing narratives across various platforms, and then really think about what's next and plan with each other and talk about how we support one another as we move forward in this work, because it's not easy work, and it's hard work, and it's also hard work. So the more that we can figure out how to support each other in that work, I think the better off we're going to be individually and collectively.
If you're just tuning in, I am speaking with the new executive director of the Bay Area Book Festival, J.K. Fowler. The festival will be in downtown Berkeley from May 31st to June 1st. I agree with you that it's like a family reunion. I had the honor of leading a diverse romance panel last year outdoors, and I had a lot of fun. That was a dream come true because I used to watch C-SPAN when I was a kid. I still watch C-SPAN, but I used to watch like C-SPAN 2. This was book TV. And I was like, one day I would be at a book festival and I'm an interview writer. So I was so happy I got to do that. So thank you to the Bay Area Book Festival for that. But yeah, it does feel like a reunion because as far as, you know, me being part of the writing community here in the Bay Area, so getting to see writers, and that's the great thing too. You get to talk to some of your favorite authors possibly. And then like you make friends with other people there because you're out. Especially in the area, I guess that's the Bookworm Block Party, like that area where people are just hanging out, enjoying the sun, eating. And it's a family event because you can bring the kids.
You can bring the kids. And it's, the Bookworm Block Party used to be known as our outdoor fair. And this year it's 120 exhibitors. We have a couple new features as part of it. We have the Small Press Alley. As you know, I love small presses and indie presses. So Small Press Alley is basically going to be the top of Alston Way between Shattuck and Oxford. And it's going to be a ton of small presses from around the nation. We have Ugly Duckling Press coming out from Brooklyn. We have Transit Books, you know, local here to Berkeley, North Atlantic Books. AK Press is going to have a big presence. And then we're, again, partnering with local independent bookstores to be booksellers at each of the stages throughout the day. You know, it's really special that you get to support independent booksellers as well as the amazing authors. And then if you need some rejuvenation and self-care, you can pop over to Health and Community Row, which is sponsored by BAM CDC. That's the Black Arts Movement District Corporation of Oakland. And they're going to have four booths there with direct and indirect health services, including things like free massages and, you know, energy work. And they're going to have some information about how to take care of yourself and your communities. And so that's a new feature that we're introducing as well.
Wow. So those are a lot of changes. Those are some big changes.
What we're in a moment of being responsive to, but not reactive to the times we're in, right? And so what does it mean to be responsive versus reactive? I think responsiveness means that we're able to frame the conversations that need to be had while also setting aside the space to future cast and think about what's next, right? We're not always going to be under the same regime. Something is going to come after this. And what is that? Mm-hmm. And so inviting all of us to think into what it is we want beyond what we're facing today, I think is really important.
A couple more questions and then we'll wrap up. We were kind of tipping into talking about fun things to do. Okay, so you mentioned massages. So that's fun. What other fun things can people look forward to at the festival?
Yeah, I would say, so Family Day is great. It has, you know, panels and presentations, but there's also a lot of activities that are going to be happening throughout that day at Berkeley Central Library on May 31st. On June 1st, we are going to have a family stage, and that whole area is going to be activated with activities on the stage and then also in the audience. We'll have a drag story hour at some point on that stage. The exhibitor booths are going to have activities as well. So lots of ways to get involved.
Okay, so it's a new vibe. So my last question, as you talk about being futuristic, you're already looking to the future for next year's festival?
Yeah, so this year's theme was changing the narrative. Next year's theme is going to be writing the future. And so this gets into some of what, you know, I was discussing before, which is we want to take the conversations that we're having this year at this year's festival around how do we tweak the narrative? How do we change? How do we invite in complication? And we want to start using those tools to craft the future that we want to live, that we want to see. And so the invitation for next year's festival is about writing the future, leaning into those speculative potential futures together, while also having the conversations that are responsive to whatever's happening at that time, but being really intentional. And there might be some generative components here where, you know, we're actually having workshops where there's a document that comes out of those workshops that sort of frames a piece of that future that we want to see. So we're still thinking through the details, but you're going to hear much more about it once we finish this festival.
My Star Trek fan heart and Octavia Butler fan heart and Ryan Coogler fan heart just leaped out of my throat, leaped out of my chest. Y'all, you know I'm going to be there. I know my producer, Porfiria Rangel, is probably like giddy right now because we love spec and we love, you know, futurism and Afrofuturism. And when you think about people who have been oppressed, you know, our ancestors, they always imagined a better future and told stories. So that's deep, JK. I will be there and I'm excited about that. But I'm excited about this one too. So, and I'll be at the book festival this year. Congratulations again on the new position. Thank you so much for coming through and talking to me today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me and looking forward to seeing you May 31st and June 1st.
The festival is on May 31st and June 1st in downtown Berkeley, and I will be there, so I hope to see you there. That's all the time we have for the Sights and Sounds show with me, Janae Darden. Thank you to our show producer, Porfirio Rangel, our board operator, Damian Miner, and our director of audio programming, David Boyer. And thank you for tuning in. Also, make sure to check out KALW's own Ben Trefney, who will be on The Family Feud tonight with his family at 6 p.m. on KPIX Channel 5, so make sure you watch that. I hope he wants some money. If he wants some, Ben Trefney, go share me a few dollars with me. Also, too, this weekend, check out Touch Grass on Saturday, May 24th at Snow Park in Oakland. It's a free community event featuring meditation, yoga, DJs, food, all kind of good stuff. It's to promote wellness and connection and to address mental health barriers in the Black community during Mental Health Awareness Month. So shout out to them. And for you Prince fans out there that's listening, next Thursday, June 7th, I'll be part of a poetry reading about the late singer. And you can join us at Pegasus Books at 7 p.m. And this event is part of the Berkeley Poetry Festival. Have a great Memorial Day weekend. Tell a friend about this show, and we'll have another great show for you right here next Wednesday at 4 p.m. Until then, be good to yourselves and each other.